My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977. And for that, I am eternally grateful. And everybody in my family is eternally grateful. I have a home group, and that's the West Connect Group in Jacksonville, Florida. And I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. And those are the things that I need to have to be a good member in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. John, thank you, honey. Thank you. I'll do anything for John. But I am delighted to be up here. I really was not that excited. I just got home late Sunday night to come turn around and drive back to Atlanta. But I love to come up here. I love the AA up here. I love the people up here. And we had a big shindig last weekend, called Girls Talk. And there's a shirt even here. I see the shirt. So, it's just phenomenal. You guys have got a big event coming up. And your big event is in August, first weekend in August. And I'd be here with bells on it, but I'm going to be in Midland, Texas. My husband was here a couple of years ago to the Atlanta Roundup. And I personally know your speakers. So come hear your speakers. They're fabulous, absolutely fabulous. And I hope you'll be a part of it. And one of the things that I feel like is when I go to a conference, which is why I do the conference that I do. I love it. I think it's the thing, you know, it's the thing that just kind of gives you that medicine to kind of get you going, you know, just get those veins moving. It's what pumps you up. It's what gives you that enthusiasm. And one of the things that I really believe is that if it's not fun, I couldn't do it. And that's one of the things that I think Alcoholics Anonymous is. Yeah, we're dying people. We're absolutely dying people. And we've got to work the steps. And we've got to help people. And the other thing is that we've got to fellowship together. And one of the things that it says in A Vision for You, it says for alcohol, is there a sufficient substitute for alcohol? Yes. It is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So turn out to a conference and enjoy yourself. Have a little fellowship. Do you guys have a dance?
Not this year. We have
live music. It's like, go have some fun. Enjoy your sobriety. My husband and I belong to a speaker meeting in Southern California. That was our home group. And it was called Monday Night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting. And I love that meeting. I went there for 22 years. Sat in the same seat. Dave and I sat in the same two seats for 22 years. And one of the things my husband used to say is that's how we celebrate sobriety. We come out and gather up in fellowship. And that's not to say you don't get, you know, stay in the book and do service, but it's wonderful. So I'm delighted to be invited to be the speaker for your the meetings that you're having for your roundup. So thank you, thank you, thank you. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what I'm supposed to do. It tells me that I'm supposed to share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. And I'm going to do that to the very best of my ability. And now that I am an older statesman in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have come to the place that I've been around here long enough, and I am certainly old enough that I have one little minute of preaching. And that is that I am 39 years sober. And one of the things that I believe in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is that it tells me I have a progressive illness. And I believe that. And if I have a progressive illness, as the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I have, then at 39 years of sobriety, I am more alcoholic than I was 39 years ago. And what I know today is, at 39 years of sobriety, is that I need more meetings, not less meetings. Because one of the things that I know is the further away from the drink, the closer I get to the drink. And I see this. I don't know if you've watched somebody who has long-term sobriety go out and drink again. But two things happen. First of all, they don't last because it's a progressive illness. My illness is working even though I'm still sober. So they don't last long. It's like it says in the big book. The guy was 25 years sober. He got his slippers. He got the magazine. He sat back and he was dead in a year. That's what happens. I'm not going to make it all that time. And the worst of all is rarely will the ego release to let you back. That's the worst part of all, is the ego will not let you back because, oh my God, I had all this sobriety. Well, you know, I'm alcoholic every single day. I am alcoholic. And what happens is that I still to this day have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. And with 39 years of sobriety, that I ought to be able to not drive to, you know, to Atlanta two weekends in a row. I ought to be able to do that. No, I can't. One of the things that I do, and I've been doing this since I got sober, is if somebody asks me to do something in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have one word for that. Yes. And it's like I told John when he called. I said, John, I'll do anything for you. Absolutely. And the thing about it is, I am the one who benefits. Now, I'm really kind of excited to be kind of out a little bit. I haven't really been traveling or left Jacksonville. Doesn't mean I haven't been going to a lot of meetings. But my husband's been very ill. My husband has been recovering from lung cancer. And so, you know, and I haven't been able to travel like I have been. But I tell you what, I am so delighted to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so delighted that I've had all your prayers. And thank you. But he's saying that they were, you know, the people around who were saying, they said prayers for my husband. And I am so grateful because he's not great, but he's 7 months. Because he's 7 months, December the 3rd he was operating on. I think he's 7 months recovering. And he's 80 years old. So let me tell you something. He's a really tough old bird. I'm telling you, he has absolutely just kicked it, man. He has just done so good. So thank you for your prayers. And I just give you a little report on Dave. I am living, breathing proof that you can be a real alcoholic and not come from the disease of alcoholism. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. I really believe, for me, that that's a gift. Because I believe if I'd have had one person to blame this disease on, I don't think I'd be here. If I could just say, it was the way I was treated. It was what happened to me. And I know there are some tragic stories, because I work with a lot of women. And I sponsor women who have tragic, tragic stories. That's not my story. I am one of these people that was absolutely a loved and cherished child. And not only that, I was an only child. My mother and dad would have done anything to make me happy. But there was just something in me. I think for me, the person that I was, just a bottomless pit. Nothing was enough. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that nothing's enough. You can't love me enough. You can't give me enough. You can't do enough. There is not enough for a person like me. And my parents were not wealthy. And my mother worked. I'm 75 years old. And if there's any other ladies around that are that old, when I was a little girl, it was very rare that mothers worked. That just didn't happen. But my mother worked because she had to help. My dad was a contractor. My dad had an eighth grade education. My mom was a nurse. And what happened was, as I was a latchkey kid before it was ever popular. And I didn't want that. I wanted my mother to be home like everybody else's mother. So I was angry about that. The other thing is my mother and daddy worked. So they sacrificed so that I could have dancing lessons and gymnastic lessons, all the things that any little girl would want. But like I said, my parents didn't have a lot of money. And what would happen is my mother would work all day, and then she would sit up all night making me clothes, dancing costumes, whatever. And she'd make beautiful things. I've got a picture of a formal dress hanging in my house. My wedding, my first wedding, when I got married the first time. I've only been married twice. It's not a lot. Dave's been married four times. And I've only been married twice. She made my wedding dress. And I'm here to tell you, what was with me is, I don't want you to make my clothes. I want to buy clothes like everybody else buys clothes. Absolutely that kind of kid. Just nothing. Nothing was good enough for me. Spoiled, rotten. Now, am I going to say that my parents were just perfect? Not in the least. Because I really believe that had my dad taken a drink of alcohol, he would have been an alcoholic. Because he was restless, irritable, and discontent. And he had a red-hot temper. But we were raised Southern Baptists. Now, since I've moved to the South, in Jacksonville, I grew up in Texas. Since I'm in Florida now, when I was living in California and Washington State, they don't know what Southern Baptist is. But I tell you, you guys know what it is. And there was a lot of that shall not drink. And my parents didn't. And so we didn't drink. They didn't drink. But I tell you, I'll never be able to prove it, but I believe if my dad had taken a drink of alcohol, he would have been an alcoholic. Because he seemed to have, now that I look at myself, all the symptoms of restless, irritable, and discontent. But he didn't take a drink of alcohol. I am so grateful today that I know what's wrong with me. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what's wrong with me. And what's wrong with me is I am suffering. It says I am suffering from a spiritual malady. That's what's wrong with me. I have a disease that only a spiritual solution will solve. I have got to get myself. I have got to make myself fit. It says I have got to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and those about me. That's my job. My job. I got a primary purpose. I don't know if you remember, you know, that preamble that we read. I have a primary purpose, and that's to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. That means I got to be doing something. I got to be helping somebody else stay sober. And I love what Clancy says. He talks about Bill Wilson. And when he was 6 months sober, he says, your life and my life hung by a thread. Because what happened is, Bill was very frustrated. Because he said, you know, I'm working with hundreds of alcoholics and nobody stayed sober. And out of nowhere, Lois says, but Bill, you're sober. And that's the turning point for you and me. Because see, what happens is, this is where one alcoholic helps another alcoholic. And when all else fails, I don't know about you, but there are days when I am restless, irritable, and discontent, and I can't concentrate for 30 nanoseconds. I can't read the book. I can't pray. I can't do any of that. Thank God that I sponsor women and Alcoholics Anonymous, because my phone's going to ring. And because my phone rings, I may be grumbling, I may be yelling at Dave, I may be doing a lot of stuff, but that phone will ring and I'll go, hi, honey. And my attitude changes. It changes. And what happens is that saves my life. I don't know to this day what I do for a single person that I sponsor, but I'll guarantee you what they do for me. They saved my life on a daily basis. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, what I had married was a SAC pilot. And this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And I have never wanted to be responsible for myself. I am just one of these people. I'm a Southern gal. I was born and raised in Texas. And I was just sure that men were put on earth to take care of women. Now, where I ever got that idea, I don't know, because here was my mother who worked. Okay, where do you get this? But somehow I thought what would make me happy was money, men, and mansions. And pay a lot of attention to me. And here I marry this man who is going to be gone. And I'm going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And I ended up, and I had two little boys. I had absolutely no idea. I did not have parenting 101. I was 19 years old when my first son was born. And I did not know what to do with this little boy. And what happened for me is that I ended up being a mom that abused her children. And one of the things that I like to talk about is alcoholism, the family disease. And what I'm going to talk about, let me just back up a second, and let me just tell you about my first drink. Now, one of the things I think is just so amazing is that most people don't remember their first drink, but an alcoholic does. Now, I didn't know that in 2016, on AA's 76th birthday, anybody know that today is AA's 76th birthday? 81st. I'm sorry. What am I saying? 80, 70. See? Sorry. 81st. We did 80 here, right here in Atlanta. Oh, and I'm saying 76. So there you go. I'm 5 years back behind. You know, I'm all the way back in San Antonio. So 81st, our 81st birthday. Alcoholics Anonymous has been around that long. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. That I would remember my first drink. I took my first drink when I was 18 years old. I had married this man, and we had moved to Sacramento, California. And he was going to be going through B-47 training. And I got this little invitation in the mail, and it was from the base commander's wife. And it had a big red mandatory stamped on it. And I was invited to attend a coffee that was given by her. And so all of a sudden, I am one of these people that is always just never, the classic thing we talk about, the disease of alcoholism. Nobody ever believes that we're enough. You know, I'm never enough. I don't know what enough is, but I'm not enough. And I was just certain that these women were going to be educated and they were going to be sophisticated. And I was just this little 18-year-old girl. And, you know, I just was overwhelmed with feelings of inadequacy. And that's always the feeling I had, that I was just always inadequate, that I didn't have the right words to say. I didn't have any of that. I was just inadequate. And what happened is I go to this coffee, and this base commander's wife begins to tell all of us little second lieutenant's wives what we're going to do to enhance our husband's career, how we're going to go to the right dinner parties, how we're going to have the right dinner parties, how we will be dressed appropriately, any function we will attend. We will dress all of our, we will wear the white length gloves. We will be presentable. And I'm just sitting there thinking, oh my God, I'm a hick from Texas. I don't even know where the forks and the things go. How am I going to do all this? And I'm terrified, absolutely terrified, because I'm certain that I'm not going to measure up. I'm not going to be able to do it. And so what happens a few weeks later is there is an officer's wives luncheon. And, of course, I'm supposed to attend that. So I go to this luncheon. Now, they have this long table, and it has all these little glasses on it, and it has this fountain. And I found out what the little glasses were. They were sherry glasses. And coming out of the fountain was sherry. And I just watched these ladies pick up the glass and put it under the fountain. And I picked up my glass, and I put it up under the fountain. And I took that drink of alcohol, and I can remember taking that drink as if it were yesterday. And I remember it going down and how warm it was. And it just seemed like that I just had this knot in my stomach all my life, just this knot, nervous, always anxious. And it just seemed like I could just take a breath. I could just breathe. And it just seemed to just mellow me right out. And I put my glass up under there again. And I took another drink. Now, I didn't get drunk that day, but something happened to me that day. And I'm pretty sure that it probably didn't happen to anybody else that day. Maybe it did. Maybe there was somebody else that happened to. It's really strange. I've met nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous. We were in the military for 22 years. And I have not run into anybody else in AA that we were with. I don't know any. And what is even more ironic, I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't even know another alcoholic. I didn't even know another alcoholic. To my knowledge, I didn't know one. I don't have alcoholic parents. The people in the military that I hung out with, they weren't alcoholic. I was the alcoholic. And I really did not, I mean, I'd seen, you know, days of wine and roses and I'll cry tomorrow, but that wasn't me. I mean, you know, that wasn't who I was. But what happened is that I don't think that I became an instant alcoholic, but I know for a fact, because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the doctor's opinion tells me so, that what happens for me is that I got that feeling at once, that feeling of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks of alcohol. That's what happened to me that day. I got it at once. I'm here to tell you, I don't think I became an alcoholic right away, but I became an alcoholic. And what happened is that I was always anxious. And I ended up going to an Air Force doctor. And this is the only thing that I will make reference to drugs. But I went to an Air Force doctor, and I guarantee you, they did not want me upsetting the jock because they didn't want me giving him any problems because he had a very, very hard job. And what they did is they ended up giving me Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimutol. And I took those drugs and drank alcohol. And what happens is that you're not an active alcoholic if you do that. I did my dying on my living room sofa. Now, I have been blessed to have wonderful sponsorship. And my first AA sponsor, after I got through reading my fifth step to him, he looked at me with as much love as a person could look at. He looked at me and he said, "Polly, you are a child abuser." He did not tell me that I had hurt my kids. He told me that I was a child abuser and that I was going to have to make amends to my sons. And I didn't know how I was going to do that. How do you do that? That was the problem. Is that if I would sober up, I knew what I had done to my kids, and I couldn't bear it. I absolutely could not bear it. And I just, I just didn't know how I was going to make amends to him. And what he told me, he said, is, Polly, you just use the second part of the serenity prayer. And that is, God, to give me the courage to change the things I can. To go there to my sons. Now, I believe with all my heart that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease. And that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. And I will assure you that my sons, my youngest, who will be 54 tomorrow, and my oldest, who is already 56, still show the scars from the disease of alcoholism. My oldest son the most, because he does not have a program, but he does have a spiritual path. He has since become a devout Catholic. So he has a spiritual path. But it has taken, I'm 39 years sober, and he has just begun to truly have a relationship with me. My youngest son is a member of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We more or less got sober together. James is 32 years sober. So he and I kind of grew up in AA together. So we have worked the steps and made amends and done the things that we've needed to do in order to build a relationship. But that hasn't been the case with my oldest son. But today, it's beginning to be that way. Rarely did he ever call me, and he's calling me. And it's just like one of those things you hear all the time. Just don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. And one of the things I was told about my son is that it doesn't matter if he calls me. You call him. You go be the best mom you can be no matter what. You be the very best mom you can be. And that's what I've done. It's just no matter what. I go to California. He sometimes allows me to see him 2 or 3 times. And I'm just delighted. I know he loves me. And one of the things I used to say, Russ, why don't you call me? And he says, I just don't have anything to say. And, you know, today I just really accept he just doesn't have anything to say, so I just call him. But what happens is we do these steps and we make the amends. And I made amends to my sons. And I'm here to tell you, when I went to them, I said, you know, that my sons were 14 and 16 years old when I got sober. And I'm here to tell you, they were angry. They were really two angry little boys or young men or teenagers. And when I got through making amends to them, I said, do you have anything that you need to say to me? And man, I thought they took an Uzi and shot me with it. They had a lot to say that day. But what I'm grateful for is that they said it. Because by saying it, we've been able to build on that relationship. And I'm going to tell you two stories about being an alcoholic mom. Now I want this understood. Is I want to assure you that I loved my sons. I absolutely loved them. But what happened is that once I took a drink of alcohol, I turned into an entirely different person. I was mean. I was hateful. I hit them. I yelled at them. James, my son, is going bald, and he says the reason he's going bald is because I used to take his hair and shake his head. He had this big head of curly hair, and I just take it and I just shake it. He says, my mom pulled all my hair out. So what happened is that's who I was. That's what happened to me when I took a drink of alcohol. And when I sobered up, I couldn't bear what I had done. I couldn't bear it. So what happens? How do you bear it? You take another drink of alcohol. Because I'm an alcoholic, and that's what alcoholics do. But you see, I'm the mom that promises the kids. I had an athlete and I had a musician. I'll be at your concert. I'll be at your game. But you see, I always take a drink of alcohol and I can't make it. And then what I do is I come to and I see these little faces down at the end of the sofa. And they said, but Mom, you promised. And then I start yelling, can't you see I was sick? You don't think of anybody but yourself. Didn't you see I was sick? And then I make my alcoholism their fault. That's what we do. That's what alcoholics do. I've heard this story from my son because I've heard him speak in AA. And James talks about the reality of a person's reality who grows up in an alcoholic home. And here's his reality. He wakes up one morning. I can no longer wake my children up or put them to bed at night. They have to set an alarm and get up themselves to go to school. And I suppose he was 12 years old. And he got up, came to the kitchen. His mother's passed out on the kitchen floor with a drink spilled. He steps over me. He gets his cereal. He gets the milk. He gets the bowl. Puts it all together. Puts everything back. God forbid he leave anything out on the cabinet. And he steps back over me, sits down, and eats his breakfast and feels nothing. That is an abnormal reaction to that situation. That is an abnormal reaction. My oldest son would take care of me. And what would happen is, I don't know if you've seen anybody drinking alcohol and taking barbiturates and tranquilizers, but we don't breathe very well. And what would happen is Russ would try to get me up to go to bed or something. And he would start screaming, Mom, wake up, are you dead? And I would come to and I'd see this fear in his eyes. And you know, for the past 39 years, I haven't had to see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes because of something I'm doing. And one of the things I know is this program works. This program works. Because I tell you, I am not that woman anymore. I know she's still there. She sits right here. And if I ever took a drink of alcohol, she'd come back. I don't want that anymore. I don't want to be that person ever again. Now, I don't have any great stories to tell and funny things. I did all my affairs sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have, you know, so the stories I have to tell drinking, I just pass out on my sofa. So what happened for me, I'm just going to tell you what happened. And what happened is I ended up having a car wreck in Irving, Texas. And that car wreck would bring me to a detox center in Euless, Texas. And it was a 7-day detox. And what happened is I'm a blackout drinker. And I got out of my car when I wrecked my car. And I walked to a phone booth. Now, some of you young people don't even know what that is. But I walked to a phone booth. And I called the police and told them that my car had been stolen. And so here comes the police with my husband. And I'm taken to the Irving police station. And I got to see that look on the non-alcoholic who just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband and he said, why don't you just take her home and sober her up? And on the way home, he said, Polly, there's a treatment center and it's not far from our house and I wish you would go. And I entered treatment for the first time. It was a county detox. This was no fancy jitter joint. And what happened was, it was a detox center, and I'm telling you, I loved it. We would sit up until all hours of the night, and these people would tell these stories. I mean, oh my God. I was so naive when I got to that treatment center. I mean, some of these people had been divorced. Some of them had been to jail. There were a few that had been to prison. Oh, my God. When I entered that treatment center, I had never even said the F word. I'm telling you, I am so good at it, it's unbelievable. But what happened is I loved to listen to these stories. I just couldn't believe it. But you see, Dr. Thibault, who's a little tougher on us than Dr. Silkworth is, If any of you like, I love AA history, so if you like AA, comes of age. But Dr. Thibault says that every alcoholic has two characteristics, defiant individuality and grandiosity. And what happened for me is, I listened to these stories, and I said, people like me don't become alcoholic. I'm not alcoholic like these people are alcoholic. I just drank too much. That's not me. And I had a Jitter House romance, you know, where sick girl falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. I walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was 12 steps out of a motel in Euless, Texas, and brought back into that treatment center. And I knew for a fact what was wrong with me. I can't live inside my own skin sober. Let me tell you the facts of my life at that point in time. My husband had been medically retired from the Air Force. He was 100% disabled. And he was about 90% bedridden. My daddy was in Henderson Hospital in Abilene, Texas, dying from colon cancer. And my children were falling apart. That was the condition of my life. Those were the facts of my life when I was in that treatment center. And I sat there and I said, I can't live inside my own skin sober, because sober I know who and what I am, and I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And what happened is when that 7-day detox was up, I got a bottle of Valium and I got a bottle of scotch, and I checked into a motel. I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that's here that you don't have an angel in your life. Someone, somehow, that leads us here. And I had such a woman in my life. She knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day, something came over her. And today I know that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And the door hadn't shut all the way. It was just closed. And she pushed it open and she found me there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. By God's grace, and I believe it's grace, that we all live in grace. Because we're people who are here that should have been dead. We're people who are here. Some of us have had all kinds of gun wounds, car wrecks, all sorts of things. And we're here. Pronounced. My story is common. Being pronounced dead on arrival. Oh my God. Common thing happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. The common thing. And what happened is I stand here today sober. Standing in God's grace. I know God loves me. And I'm so glad that I don't have a punishing God. Because you see, I grew up in that Baptist church. And I just knew that I would never, ever be good enough for God. But what happened is God is so merciful. So merciful. That he saves, as the old song goes, Amazing Grace, a wretch like me. He saves a wretch like me and lets me have a life beyond my greatest expectation, the life that I get to have, because I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to have a life beyond anything I could have expected. Well, the state of Texas does not take kindly to people who try to commit suicide. It's just like it is in 2016. If you try to do that, you will get the attention of the authorities. I got the attention of the authorities, and I was put on a little 72-hour hold and trotted off to a psychiatric hospital, which was enough time for my husband to get a court order from a Fort Worth judge that I was a detriment to myself and others, and I was court committed to treatment. And I entered that treatment center on April the 11th of 1977. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober ever since. And what I would like to do is I'd like to take about 15 minutes, and I'd like to share with you the great events that have come to pass in my life. And in a vision for you, it says that if I stay spiritually fit, that great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. It is a fact that this will happen. And that's what has happened for me. And when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not a poster child for AA. I wanted a lot of attention, which a lot of us do, and I especially wanted a lot of attention from men. And I ended up having a lot of affairs in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happens is I was really good friends with Dave. I did not have an affair with Dave. He sponsored a lot of the guys I had an affair with. He knew me better than he needed to. But when I was 3.5 years sober, and Dave was 4.5 years sober, he came to me and he said, "Polly, I'm in love with you, but you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." And I want you to know that Dave and I left Texas married, but not to each other. But we got married on October the 27th, 1980. And Dave and I, in October, will be married 36 years. That is a great event that has come to pass. And we have grown in this relationship. Life has been in session. Life happens. It doesn't matter that we're in AA. Life is in session. It's going to happen. And we've had a lot of amazing things happen. And then we've had some things that have been really painful. We lost a son 13 years ago, Dave's oldest son, Michael. He died of lung cancer. We lost him, he had AIDS and he ended up having lung cancer. And that's eventually what took him out. These are things that happen. Dave's daughter, she's still, sometimes she's here and sometimes she isn't. That's painful stuff. You think, God, Dave's 40 years sober, I'm 39 years sober. God, surely, you know, they come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Surely that would happen. But those kind of things, it hasn't happened yet. Dave and I ended up having to file bankruptcy. We were 16 and 17 years sober. God, you don't want to be telling that from the podium. I mean, what are people going to think? What step are you working if you're filing bankruptcy? You know? And what happened is God uses everything. Whatever happens to us, He uses. And what happened is I have this fabulous, fabulous AA sponsor. And she died 2 years ago. And I had her for 35 years. She was my AA sponsor. And Dottie was just, she was always, I mean, she had had so much stuff happen to her in her life. But she was still so fabulous. And she never, ever, she just always kept the faith. And I just say, "Oh, I don't want to share that. What will people think?" And she would say, "Polly, it doesn't matter. Whatever has happened to you, be honest from the podium. Somebody can use it. Whatever it is, share it in a general way." Well, you know what? I didn't realize. See, this was back in 1993 when you got like 6 weeks for unemployment. You know, so, you know, my husband he went to work 2 minimum wage jobs for 2 years. I didn't realize that come 2008 that the bottom was going to fall out of the economy again, and about 10 sponsees that I have were going to go through the exact same thing I went through. And I could tell, you know, there's life after bankruptcy. You can live through that. There's life. No matter what happens, whatever we have experienced, God can use it. Can absolutely use it. One of the things that I have had more, it's one of the things that there's one promise in the nine step promises that haven't, that has never come completely, has not come true for me. And that is that we will not regret the past. And I had, this is something that happened to me while I was in Australia. This woman walked up to me and she says, "You can certainly tell that that line was written by a man. Because if you are a mother and you have been the kind of mother that I have been, I would give anything if that had not have happened." Now, what has happened is that those, they have had to be responsible to do a lot of recovery for a lot of damage I've done. And what happened is I don't like that. I wish that that hadn't happened. I wish that my sons had not had to go through that. But they have. Now, I believe, they believe they're better men for it. And I'll be glad when I never have that, that when that I don't have that feeling anymore. But it's still there. I do. I regret the past. I regret that. I wish that had not happened. But we get to grow up here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to grow up. My husband and I have got to grow up together. We've got to find out how to stay married. One of the things, I'm Dave's fourth wife, and one of the things we wanted to do was stay married. And we got around people who helped us stay married. And we learned to work the traditions in our relationship. And we learned to realize that the God is the all, is the authority. He's the guy in charge. For us, that's where we go. There are no bosses in our relationship. And I wanted a true partnership. And the 12 and 12 says that me as an alcoholic cannot form a true partnership with another human being. I have formed a partnership. And I can tell you what's happened as a result of lung cancer. I have a relationship today. I have got to care for my husband. I could not care for my first husband who was so sick. I couldn't care for him. And God gets, we get to go to AA and we get to do do-overs. We get to do it over again. First of all, I have five grandkids that have never seen me drink and they think I'm just really, really a hot grandma. And they think I'm a lot of fun. And they've never seen me drink. And I've gotten to do a do-over. And I would never harm those kids. Never. And I have gotten to take care of my husband. I have got to be present. Not leave him for the past 6 months. I have got to be there. And an intimacy has formed with us that I would never have ever expected. Because when somebody's that sick and you're taking care of them, you're doing a lot of personal stuff. And we've been able to do that. And I wouldn't take anything for that. We both say it all the time. We'd never take anything for the experience that we've got to have. I get to sponsor women in this program. I get to do that. And you know, it's like I said, I don't know what I do for them, but I know what they do for me. Because see, I'm a Bill Wilson. Left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. But because of this program, and because of these steps, and because of the concepts, and the traditions, and the 36 principles that we get to live by, I know today that I am a useful human being. And one of the things that my son said to me when he came to AA 32 years ago, he said, "I knew AA worked because I saw the transformation in my mother." Thank you.